Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hello, Scott Tilford.
And no one else, which means only one thing. We can commandeer the main podcast slot and do our own thing. Now, last time we did this, we decided to rank some stuff entirely subjectively. And the last two times we did this, we broke down From Software games and we broke down the best PlayStation exclusives of the last 10 years entirely subjectively, which meant that Returnal wasn't even on my top 10.
Tragic.
Because who even needs that game? Not me. But we thought this time we would do, in celebration of the Marvel Disney live stream D23 Expo that's about to go down in the next few weeks, we thought we'd break down the best superhero games of all time. But again, entirely subjectively. So if there's some mad banter picks in here, we're not going with any objective measure. We're not saying that Arkham Asylum is number one just because it's the best made game or whatever. Maybe we're saying Captain America Super Soldier is number one because I can make the case for that game.
Is that what you're saying, Scott Tilford? Is that your number one pick?
I'm not saying it. That game. No, it's definitely not a number one. Captain America Super Soldier, I will have as my official honorable mention. I will also say that we tried recording this podcast earlier, and for whatever reason, the recording software decided to double up every few seconds, which meant that the recording just ate itself. But there was some prime Captain America banter in there.
James Dowse thought he could stop this podcast, and now he's tied up in an unnamed part of this office.
Ugh.
The technology thought they could stop these hot and spicy takes from getting out, and it couldn't. Phil came in and fixed everything.
Yes.
Third time.
It will
no
work.
One can get in our way. No one can stop you now from talking about Captain America.
So this was initially my number 10, but it's my honorable mention. I'm just going to very quickly say that I love that game's combat. And the reason, that's one of the criteria that I had for this list, is that if I'm going completely subjective, I'm going about, you know, what are the best superhero games, then it is what are the games that made you feel like that character the most? What are the games that embodied their abilities and then pushed them to the next level or whatever? So my, like I said, honorable mention, but it started as my number 10, was Captain America Super Soldier. For as much as that game is dogged on for being an Arkham ripoff, I love all the slow motion cutaways and how much they emphasize just how much strength Cap has. And then I love the shield stuff. Like hardly any game, if any game, has given us Cap shield. The nearest game that lets you have fun pinging a shield off a bunch of dudes' faces is like Destiny 2. Like you can get that one ability where you get the shield and you can fling it.
There could be another superhero game that I'll get to soon that we'll talk about. There could be.
And an interesting proposition to deliver on it further down the line. But that's my honorable mention. What are yours, sir?
First of all, I want to say that I need to thank you for the Captain America recommendation because I used to think that that was going to be a bad game and I avoided it at all costs because I thought it was going to be like the Thor game that came out at around the same time.
Uh-huh.
But then when I first started writing a What Culture and talking to you, you recommended it and you were right. You know, sometimes Scott Tilford is right, is all I'm going to say.
In 2013 or 2014, I mentioned Captain America. 2018, I mentioned Ori and the Blind Forest. It all comes together.
And Josh eventually, I'm talking to the third person now, Josh eventually gets to it, you know? It's the story older than time. Yeah, like you said, you know, there are a few criteria that was needed to hit for this list, you know, so we couldn't have multiple entries from the same franchise. So, you know, we've only got one Arkham game on here. Mm-hmm. And I imposed a sort of limitation on myself, because I could have made this entire list, this entire top 10 list, mm-hmm. out of Spider-Man games, right. but I didn't just want to make it a Spider-Man ranking. We'll save that for another time. Mm-hmm. So I want to shout out a bunch of Spider-Man games that I probably would have put on this list if it was purely just a free-for-all. So I want to shout out Spider-Man Shattered Dimensions, which is still an incredible Spider-Man game. I want to shout out Spider-Man Web of Shadows, yep. which is also amazing. Spider-Man 2 didn't make my top 10 list because it got swapped out for something else that we'll get to. And I want to shout out perhaps the best of the bunch, Spider-Man on the PlayStation 1, which yes. doesn't make my top 10 list, though is the game that got me into superheroes and got me into Marvel specifically, because that title, playing that as a kid, was unbelievable. The only reason it doesn't get on the list proper mm-hmm. is that I played it a few years ago, and while I enjoyed it from a nostalgic standpoint, it's not one unlike the rest.
It's a clunky boy.
It's a clunky boy. I couldn't recommend it to someone who doesn't have that nostalgic feeling for it, if that makes sense.
I will bring this up in due time, but Spider-Man on the PlayStation 1, we could talk about that game a lot more as we get there. Let's start bringing some stuff down. So like Josh said, the rule was you couldn't have multiple games from the same franchise or the same notable run of games. Let's say a developer had the character for a certain set of games, you might group them together. It was just a way of encouraging, making it harder on ourselves and encouraging more variety across the list. So number 10 for me is X-Men Mutant Academy, which when we started talking about doing this before recording, I forgot the name of this game. I thought it was X-Men Children of the Atom, but I remember lending this or borrowing this from a game store back in the day, back in like 90 whatever it was, and just being blown away by this game's mechanics. It's a 3D fighting game. I remember it being the first time I'd ever seen those characters in 3D. It was on PlayStation 1. And it's just immaculate. I love just how fast it is. I love the move variety that you have, and I love how many sort of traversal options you have in terms of the mobility stuff. Like playing as Beast, you can just dominate the screen, and everyone has really cool over-the-top finishes. It's just slick as hell.
I would agree. I really enjoyed playing these games as a kid, and similarly to you, yes. it was also the first time I'd seen a lot of these characters in 3D. For me, it was Mutant Academy 2, though, rather than 1, which, you know, had great models, and just, like, it made me... For me, especially when I was younger, the best superhero games would get me intrigued in the lore and would have me reading like character bios and going on a primitive version of the internet that I had at the time and looking at power levels and stuff like that. And Mutant Academy 2 definitely sparked that intrigue, you know, trying to figure out who these people were, because I'd only really kind of like watched the 90s cartoon show and the first X-Men movie. So I wasn't prepared for these versions of these characters, and I didn't understand why they kind of like looked the way they did, but that was really alluring on top of this really good, you know, fighting system that you mentioned. They were, you know, a lot of people talk about Marvel versus Capcom as like the fighting arena, but Mutant Academy was, both Mutant Academy games were something.
I think as well, like we're talking about games that came out like before the MCU blew up, like before everyone talked about superheroes, when it felt like superheroes or TV shows or whatever were just a little bit more less talked about, maybe amongst your friends or something. But it was like when a game like this came along, it was like, this is why this stuff is awesome. You can give anyone this game. It still holds up really well today as well.
Well, that's it. Yeah, it's important to put it into context because, you know, while there were X-Men movies, you know, those X-Men movies didn't necessarily get the lore right. You know, you've got Sabretooth and Wolverine in that first film, and it's not mentioned that they're supposed to be brothers or anything like that. It's kind of they were adapting things. Hollywood was adapting things as they saw fit. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I didn't know who half the roster was because, you know, my friends didn't have an encyclopedic knowledge of X-Men. And, you know, it was difficult to get online and kind of figure this stuff out. Like you said, you know, they weren't as well known in the pop cultural lexicon as they are now. And that was...
I love a pop cultural lexicon.
So do I. Very tasty. Very
slimy
crunchy.
One.
Surprisingly slimy and crunchy.
I think in regards to this game, the final note is that they should just put this on the PlayStation Premium service. I think in terms of its core mechanics, it just does hold up. It's very slick and very fast and very responsive. I love this game, but what's your number 10?
It is another X-Men game. Ooh. It's X-Men Legends 2. I would also have liked to put X-Men Legends 1 on there, but I like that in the second game. This, if you don't know, is kind of like a Marvel Ultimate Alliance-style game, and if you don't know what that is, it's kind of like a dungeon crawler where you get to control a party variety of four X-Men characters that you can swap between. You can play a co-op, and you're essentially just like crawling through these dungeons.
Back when four-player co-op was cool.
Exactly. Hey. Beating up a load of dudes using the unique powers of everyone. And X-Men Legends 2 allowed you to play as the villains as well as the regular heroes. So you got to play as Mystique, you got to play as Magneto, you got to play as, I think, Mr. Sinister. No, he was a bad guy that you could maybe unlock. You got to play as Iron Man, as a secret unlockable character.
Okay.
And again, these games were just great at introducing you to the X-Men lore, giving you some cool little storylines that were partially adapted from the comic books. The second game, X-Men Legends game, was Age of Apocalypse. So, you know, Apocalypse and Mr. Sinister and whatnot. They were the main villains in this. And I have a soft spot for those kind of four-player co-op, like dungeon crawling beat-em-ups. And they work for me because you get to experience a lot of different characters, which is obviously great for a roster as big as the X-Men has. Mm-hmm. And then it got you interested in favorites. Obviously, you know, Wolverine's in there. I really loved playing as Cyclops, and his, you know, optic blasts and such were really fun to play. Mm-hmm. And I also think there was a surprising amount of depth to the combat because those powers were able to be leveled up. They were able to be swapped out. All of that stuff. Really cool game. It still plays really well if you own a PlayStation 2. They should definitely put these games on the PlayStation Plus service, like you said. I think they're great.
Just get Raven out of the Call of Duty mines and point them back towards some sort of top-down four-player thing.
Yes.
Because it works very, very well. Like I said, I used to, like you said, you have a soft spot for it. Same. Like, we're going to talk about some other stuff that Raven did, you know, down the line. That, like, that whole, I remember when X-Men Legends first did the rounds when I was in high school and everyone's like, have you seen this game? Like, this is just, this is the game. This is the way that you play as all the X-Men all at once. And obviously they would go on to do the Ultimate Alliance stuff and everything else. But yeah, there was such a feel to those games that I feel like even Ultimate Alliance 3 couldn't get right.
Right.
Like Ultimate Alliance 3, obviously it's different dev. I think it's Platinum. But still, 3 was way more on like, I don't know, it just didn't feel the same way.
No.
It didn't really let you build your characters out the same way. It was a lot more grindy. My number 9 is Batman the Telltale series.
Ooh.
Episode 1 or season 1. Season 2 is fun. They throw a lot more villains and stuff in there. But I just love season 1. I love the whole the duality of being Bruce and Batman, and no other game has ever done that, where like you're having a conversation with someone as Bruce. Say you're talking to Falcone or whatever, you're talking to some gangster, and you know, like, you're picking apart like what you want to talk to them as when you're Batman. And then when you get the scene later, obviously they're story based, so those scenes are going to happen in a certain order, but you do get dialogue choices and everything. And I love just like reapproaching the same person now as Batman, knowing that you can do whatever you want. And they obviously have the freedom to get as violent as you want or be more psychological about it in terms of an interrogation or whatever. I just think they nail the duality of the character. And if, like I said, if I'm grading off how much they made me feel like that character, then the Batman Telltale series. And also it's Troy Baker like doing Bruce and Batman. Like, I think that he nails the suave of Bruce and the sort of... you know, like the fakeness of Bruce Wayne, but also like and some of the vulnerability, and then just the all out walking tank that is Batman, and with the different technology he has and everything like that. So, massive shout out to Batman.
Hey man, I had that as my number 4.
Ooh-hoo.
I really enjoyed that game, the first season. For whatever reason, never played the second season. Just didn't.
I think a lot of people just dropped off.
Yeah. I mean, no one bought the first season either. It was infamously a big, you know, money sink for Telltale. Considering it had the Batman name, not many people were interested. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think if you do play that game, I would echo everything that you said. They get the duality right. They get the ability to play as Bruce Wayne and, more importantly, make that interesting. Mm. You know, we've played as Bruce Wayne in other Batman games that I'm sure we'll get to, and it's boring and it's not fun.
That's the thing as well. Just super quickly, is that the story they do is so unique. It's become less unique recently, thanks to The Batman and stuff like that. But the line they walk with, like, the Wayne's history, it is really, really cool. Even if you just play the first episode, which is now free everywhere, they just wanted to get it in front of people, play the first episode of Batman the Telltale series. It's really, really good.
I would echo that. It's a hidden gem, which is weird considering it's a Batman game and it's made by Telltale.
It's kind of crazy. What's your number 9, sir?
My number 9 is another X-Men game, and the last X-Men game on this list is X-Men Origins, Wolverine.
Yeah.
Is that
I may
yours
or may not have that
all?
Way higher up.
Really? Yeah. Okay. So we're doing the role reversal of
a little
Batman
bit,
Telltale.
A little bit.
Yeah, this is number 9 for me, just because I think it would be higher if I'd played it again more recently, but I'm kind of going off memories of it, and I remember it being very good.
Oh, I love that.
Obviously, in terms of, you know, being able to be unleashed as an R-rated Wolverine, essentially. You know, you've got, like, all of the viscera in there. You've got, like, the viscerality of the character. Mm-hmm. You've got the healing ability, which obviously is inherent to Wolverine, but this game does it so well. We've sung its praises so many times before about how you as the character, you know, your skin is getting torn off and it's regenerating
the
in
best
live action.
Representation of that healing factor ever.
100%. It looks incredibly sick. It's gnarly. You've got some great, like, kind of finishes in there, some great set pieces, and some really cool environments to boot.
Sounds like it could be number 2, Josh. I don't know.
I don't think it's that high, bro. Number 2, is that where you have it?
I've got my dude, X-Men Origins Wolverine. That thing is like pristine.
Tell me why it's number 2.
It's everything you just said, but like I said, if I'm going off embodying the character, like right. Even from the opening of that game where you drop out the helicopter and just land on a guy, completely obliterate him, and then you get back up. Hugh Jackman did the voice, right, back in then?
I'm not sure.
I'm pretty sure he did. Even if he didn't, I was going to put X2 Wolverine's Revenge in here, which I love as well. That's Mark Hamill doing Wolverine's voice, which is fun, but that game, I mean, you can kill 3 dudes in one move. I like all the group stuff in that game. Didn't crack my top 10, though. But X-Men Origins Wolverine, after you land on that dude at the start, you just like puts his arm back in and then the combat just kicks the hell off. And I love that you can just do like big giant diving attacks at people. You can rip them in half. There's the bit when you just leap on top of the helicopter and take that down.
Yep.
The main reason that I just realized I loved it, and I remember having this realization as I was playing it. I mean, a lot was spoken about in the previews about the healing system, like you said, and the devs, again, Raven, incredible studio, modeled out like an actual like bone skeleton and muscle overture thing and like skin. So as you get like torn apart, you literally get torn apart down to bone, and then Wolverine reconstitutes back up to a full person. And I just loved watching that happen. I would just stand in front of like a turret just getting like ripped apart because I was like, this is so cool. I'm just going to watch him go down to bone.
It's one of those classic video game paradoxes, isn't it? It's like so good, but if your parents walked in and they're like, hey Josh, how are you spending your afternoon? It's like, I'm watching this guy get eviscerated. And
I'm going to see if he's got a tongue.
I want to see if he's got a tongue. I want to see what's under those pectoral muscles. Yeah. Oh, it's just more viscera, is it? More
just
bone.
Some more bones and
love that.
All sorts of stuff. But yeah, I think that game is just paced incredibly well. I mean, it's literally God of War does, or Wolverine does God of War.
Yeah.
Old school God of War. Yeah, I couldn't get enough of that game. It was such a phenomenal power fantasy.
I kind of want to echo what you said about X2 Wolverine's Revenge, because I completely forgot that game existed.
What a game.
That did not get jogged in my memory, nor did it come up on any of the searches that I made on Google.com.
Right. It didn't review very well.
Is a bloody travesty. Oh yeah, I'm sure it's terrible now. But I rented that and bought that game over and over again. Mm-hmm. I would play that tonight.
I used to go, if you got a lovely Steam Deck, you can get downloaded right now.
£500 for Wolverine's Revenge.
I mean, yeah.
Sold.
So yeah, slap it down. But I think in regards to X2, that game is so like it's a prototype of stealth, it's a prototype of group combat, it's a prototype of what I guess would become the Soulsian combat over your shoulder, but like barely coming together.
Is that
for
what
any
you're
of
saying,
them?
Scott? X2 Wolverine's Revenge is the Dark Souls of the X-Men video game tie-ins.
Out of everything that's been X-Men tie-ins so far, yeah, it might be. Maybe
that.
The new Wolverine will become another one. But yeah, the X2 game was awesome. Like I said, I always remember that game for group kills. I need to make a list of all the games that let you take out multiple dudes at once, because it's super rare, and Assassin's Creed doesn't do it anymore, and it sucks. I want really cool choreographed moves that let me kick one dude in the face and then punch someone else and then spin them both over at the same time.
Also, bear with me right now, it was also a predecessor to The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt, because in this game, you could track people's footsteps by going into your sensors mode to complete missions, which is what you do in The Witcher 3, where you go into the Witcher sensor mode to track down footprints or bloodstains and whatnot. X2 Wolverine's Revenge did it first.
We'll just ignore Metal Gear Solid did the footsteps thing, or Assassin's Creed Vision mode, it's all right.
Nah, X-Men Origins, no, X-Men 2 was before... Assassin's Creed.
Yep.
Hang on, this is a working theory.
Go on, yep.
And You had to have thermal goggles in Metal Gear Solid, and it wasn't part of Snake's senses.
No, you could still see the footprint. Whose footprints are these? It's all in the snow.
But was it in a sense mode?
It wasn't in a sense mode.
Clarify here.
No, in a sense, funnily enough, that we should do a spin-off podcast called In a Sense, where we talk about the best senses.
I don't know if people at home know this, but Scott Tilford spends almost 8 hours a day coming up with pun names for business ventures that will one day become a reality. And
yeah, that will never see the light of day. But In a Sense is our new podcast dedicated to the Assassin's Creed Vision mode and X2 Wolverine's Revenge ability to see footprints. Number 8, though, is Hulk Ultimate Destruction.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Dude, I went back and forward on putting this on my list, and it didn't make it in the end, but I can totally see why it's here, if not higher.
If I want to tear a car in half and wear it as a set of boxing gloves, I can only do that in Hulk Ultimate Destruction, and I can do it very well. Actually, I think they put that in the Incredible Hulk tie-in movie game, which like 3 people played.
Me.
You. Yeah. F that game. I don't want it. But Ultimate Destruction, elbow drops off the side of a building through a tank. Yeah.
Probably like one of the best sandbox games ever, perhaps, in terms of its freedom.
Yeah, there's like a tiny little thread of games that are full-on Power Fantasies. Prototype came from this, or was before this, one of the two. In that thread of just making you feel so over-the-top powerful, Hulk, it's like the perfect version of him in this. And I have a soft spot for the initial Hulk 2003 movie tie-in game.
Me too.
Minus the Bruce Banner stealth sections, but you can't have everything.
They were good.
They were
in
not
my
good.
Opinion. I'm not going to elaborate on that. I refuse to. They were good.
They were not good. But Hulk Ultimate Destruction just wore its name on its tin, I was going to say. Wore its name on its face. And I loved all the over-the-top moves that you could do. They had that whole thing called weaponization, which has now become an accepted word in the overall, especially in gaming's lexicon.
Weaponization.
I'm sure weaponization was the term that they had for, like, you can pick something up and weaponize it.
Right.
And I remember at the time, the press being like, oh, they're inventing this term. Weaponizing everything, are we? Yes, we do. We do that a lot now. And in Hulk, it was like you could surf on a bus, you could tear a car in half, you could grab like a missile launcher and fire it all out like as if you were firing like an RPG or whatever. That game's very good.
It really was Ultimate Destruction, I would say. they've got that moniker quite right.
They nailed it. What was your number 8?
My number 8 is Lego Marvel Super Heroes, the first one from 2013 or 14, which we also talked about on the wind-up earlier this week, I'm not a huge fan of Lego games. Like, I can take or leave them. Yep. Most of the time, but I got this when I got the PlayStation 4, and I thought this was just like great. Obviously, it's a love letter to Marvel in general, which is what I'm looking for when I rank all of these games, but I love how it mixed kind of like the open world sandbox style gameplay that you want with a superhero game alongside, you know, regular Lego game levels that were more contained and whatnot. And there was a lot of secrets in there, a lot of great characters that you could play as, and a lot of different play styles within that. I just thought, you know, when we talk about open world superhero games, that needs to be in contention.
When we talk about playing as Venom in an open world city, we don't talk about Lego Marvel Superheroes, and you can absolutely do that.
And it's good as well.
Yeah.
You can play as Venom in the city and get up to a lot of cool things, even just play. Right. I know that I said before that I kept a lot of Spider-Man games here, but I would say that Lego Marvel Superheroes is actually a stealth Spider-Man game because he plays arguably the best out of the entire roster and is great whether you're in the open city or whether you're in those levels. He's awesome.
I see that proposition. I raise you Iron Man in the open city because you can just fly around as Iron Man.
Oh.
And it's just like, why was this not done in more games?
Jumping down from the shield helicarrier as Iron Man straight into the city. Like, that's awesome.
That's
man.
So good.
Lego or otherwise.
That's No Man's Sky before No Man's Sky.
You could say.
Loading a whole planet.
This is it. If X-Men Origin, I keep saying that. If X-Men 2, Wolverine's Revenge, is the Dark Souls of the X-Men franchise, then Lego Marvel Super Heroes is the No Man's Sky.
The No Man's Sky. I massively back everything that you just said. I had a surprisingly incredible time with that game. And the open world stuff is like the icing on the cake for it. Yeah, I love just taking those characters out for a spin. Stan Lee's out in the open world somewhere as well.
Yeah.
You can find him inside one of the apartments. My number 7 is Injustice 2. Which is initially wrote down a whole bunch of Marvel stuff for this and then was like, okay, DC stuff, where are these things slotting in? Injustice 2, shy of Mortal Kombat 11, is for me, is NetherRealm's best fighting game and their best game that they've done like before MK11. I'm not that much to say like extended. I just think that they nailed the mechanics they started out with in 1. And I love like the power showdown stuff where it's like if you both do a special at the same time or whatever, there's a lot of stuff that just enhances the fact that two superheroes are battering the hell out of each other. The roster's really good. The balancing's really good. I love the loot system as well, which I never say. I thought they got a good balance of unlocking stuff because you're playing, and I didn't have to resort to microtransaction stuff. And the loot itself looked awesome. Like everything I was getting, I was like, I really want to go and equip that like immediately. I just think it's a really stellar set of systems, and the single player is brilliant. The whole thing of like, would you side with Batman or Superman? I think it's Superman gets increasingly like over the top, and like the whole Injustice side story is all about like, what if Superman became a tyrant and how do you stop him and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, Injustice 2, I think, is a meaty package.
I only played this game for 1 hour.
And no way!
It's not because I didn't like it. I really enjoyed the first game when that came out. You know, I played that to death. But it was, I played the second one around the time that I was playing Mortal Kombat 11, and I was absolutely rinsing that. And then I went back to Injustice 2, and Mortal Kombat 11 is like the perfect NetherRealm fighting game. Yeah. It's so tight that I was missing that feel when I went to Injustice 2. So I kind of played myself with that because everything about it looked so cool. Everything that you just said there, I wish I could have experienced fresh at the time.
That's the thing, because they made such big like strides and have done across the 2010s. Like Injustice 2 felt like this massive step up, and then MK11 is a massive step up that you kind of just can't go back to it. What was your number seven?
My number seven, funnily enough, we both changed to DC at the exact same time, and I'm not sure how you're going to feel about this pick. My number seven is DC Universe Online.
I don't even know if you've ever mentioned that in the whole time I've known your face.
No, because I'm very shameful about it. because back when the PlayStation 4 came out and there were very few games for it, and I certainly could afford very few games for it, and then here was DC Universe Online looking at me over and over again. And I played that game for not as long as you should play an MMO4, but I sunk tens of hours into that thing.
Why have you never mentioned this?
Enjoyed my time. Because it's just kind of...
Nothing to be afraid of.
Well, it's nothing to be ashamed of. It's just DC Universe Online has such limited cultural cachet. Like, nobody talks about DC Universe Online anymore.
I remember when they did. I remember when it was on PC and it was a huge deal. And it was you make your own superhero. And I remember the first set of missions, because I did download it on PS4 as well. Because I used to watch it on... That was back when Giant Bomb was streaming some of it. And I watched that. And then I downloaded it and made my dude and did the first couple of like missions or whatever. But I was like, this just isn't for me at all. Like, I just MMO stuff isn't going to tickle the old pickle. So I didn't bother with that. But I know what it is. And I feel like a lot of people did talk about the potential of like a fully, you know, Warcraft-style DC Universe. That was in the year when the early 2010s, whenever it was Star Trek was online and DC was going online, and it was like this whole thing of like, if we can just nail this online mode, guys, like Matrix Online was dying because no one was going on.
Well, this is it. Now it feels quite antiquated because I feel like the MMO genre has kind of leveled up so much since then. You know, now if you play something like Final Fantasy 14 or The Elder Scrolls Online, even Fallout 76, you're getting these like, well, less so Fallout 76, but you know what I mean? These big games that kind of have really good combat alongside them, like really like interesting and tight gameplay. Mm-hmm. Whereas DC Universe Online was about the world first and foremost. It was about the character creation. It was about this dungeon crawling. And the combat was fine, but it was like, it couldn't match any of the superhero games that were coming out at the time. Like, it was no Arkham, for instance.
No.
But the ability to create your own superhero and exist in this DC universe, you know, alongside heroes and villains that can be your mentors that you're going against and whatnot, it was just stuff to the brim with stuff to do. And just the ability to, you know, be a character who can fly around Metropolis was, for me, a dream come true. Like, I'd always wanted to do that outside of a terrible Superman game.
I was going to say, I like that Superman Returns game,
right?
Because we're talking about that one. If we're talking about stuff that we played when we first got the console, I didn't get my 360 at launch. I got it like after, because I couldn't afford it. And when I eventually got it, I got the Superman Returns demo, I think. I forget what else came with it, but it was like, yeah, that early going thing of like, oh my God, this is the next generation. Look, I can take off and fly all the way up. And like, just that, I like that feeling of like, you know, your mind sort of fills in the blanks of like how like bad some of the character models are. But that Superman Returns game, if it nailed anything, and it barely did, it was the ability to just kick off the ground and fly all the way up and watch the city like just disappear below you as if you're like zooming out of a Google Earth thing. That stuff was cool. That's such an interesting pick though. Like I really like that in terms of the combination of the games that we're throwing up, because I feel like you said, DC Universe Online barely ever gets talked about.
I literally don't even know if you can play it anymore. I don't know if the servers are down. I genuinely might be a pointless recommendation, because someone might look that up now and be like, Josh, this game has been checked out 10 years. I would
assume that there's a little, there's a set fandom that are keeping that, still waving that flag. You would assume so. Like the name DC Universe Online is too specific for DC themselves to let it go.
That's what you thought about the Matrix Online, and look at that.
Well, you're not wrong. Matrix itself sort of died as well, though. DC still going strong.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Now, I'm going to blow your mind, because we could only pick one title from a franchise. And so that meant that I couldn't go with Spider-Man 2018 or whatever year it is. 2018?
Right. Yeah. I don't know if that's true. I don't know if that fits the criteria.
I think it was 2018, which meant this... factually meant, chemically, cellularly meant that I had to go with Spider-Man Miles Morales at number 6.
Oh, right. So this
because
is,
I had to,
okay.
It had to be done.
I forgot that game existed.
That's not good at all. No. Spider-Man Miles Morales was my initial number one. And I started rejigging stuff around. When my brain said, what's the best superhero game? My mind went to Miles Morales, because I think that it doesn't take much refining from the 2018 version, the Peter Parker game or whatever, because that game is so immaculate in itself. But I think that the way that they give you a few extra moves in the combat of Miles Morales, I love all the thunder Thunder Punch stuff that you can do, all the different modifiers that you have. I love the fact that they just trimmed off all the mini game stuff that you just don't need it. Miles Morales, I mean, I love Miles. I love Into the Spider-Verse. I love how much that game, Miles Morales is pretty much the game version of Into the Spider-Verse. Like, you have all the stuff with the Prowler and all the stuff with his uncle and all that kind of stuff. They're drawing a lot of parallels to the sort of pop culture version of Miles Morales that's emerged since Spider-Verse, which is perfect for me because I never read the original Miles comics.
Yeah.
So in terms of like pound for pound playing as this character, loving the setting, loving the way he's written, and loving the plot drive and everything, I thought Miles Morales was a better game, quote unquote, than the original Spidey 2018. I get that you wouldn't even have it without all the stuff that the original set in motion, but if I'm sizing them both up, I would give people Miles Morales. And like, we're talking splitting hairs, because you can have so much fun with Miles Morales, and you can get the Spider-Verse costume in there too. So yeah, out of the two, if I'm picking a slot, my number six slot is the Spider-Man 2018 slot, but it's pipped by Miles Morales.
Hey, you know what? I mean, it is a great game. And like you said,
hell
that,
yeah,
that spin-off adds so many cool additions to the experience. Like you said, I prefer playing as Miles because I love the way that the character in this game expresses himself more with the swingy. It's kind of like more, it's less refined than Peter's version. It's kind of like more out there. And I like the way that Miles in the city kind of like just throws himself from web to web, and he's just kind of like a mess of limbs and stuff.
They had so many, like,
so cool,
yeah, super cool, like transitional animation. So whatever you're doing when you hit the next button, he'll figure out a way to go into it.
For me as well, New York in winter is like just a cheat code for getting me to enjoy your thing. That is perfect. And I think the story, for as much as I love, and we'll get to the story of the regular Marvel's Spider-Man, like, they nail Miles as a character. They nail the dynamic with his family and friends. Like, I just wanted to spend time in his, you know, mom's apartment and stuff. Like, that stuff is incredible. And I actually was a Miles Morales fan from the beginning because I used to read the Ultimate Spider-Man comics. Like, that was the one comics run that I ever read and loved. And when, obviously, spoilers, they kill off Peter Parker in that story, then Miles comes in, I was like, actually, initially, I was initially hesitant because he's like 13 in that story. And I was like, I'm a little bit older. I don't know if I can relate to this guy. I was won over by that. Spider-Verse completely cemented him as like a pop culture phenomenon on the level of Peter Parker. And then this game, like you said, you know, manages to meld those two things and give another take on the character that is familiar, yet is defined enough to be memorable in the gaming space. What a game it is.
Oh, dude, it's perfect. I love how propulsive, like you said, all the transitional animations and the way he's learning to swing, which like has just the right amount of like, he meant to go that way, he meant to fling himself that way, but he's also getting used to it. And it's like, as a sort of Spider-Man 1.5, let's say, because we haven't got Spidey 2 yet, I think it works perfectly. It's just like slotting it in. It's like, this is what this dude got up to, and he's still figuring out the ropes, but he's doing it really well. What is your number six?
My number six is Marvel Ultimate Alliance, which I won't spend too long on, because it's pretty much plays the same as X-Men Legends, which I talked about earlier.
True.
But you can apply all the great things about those games to the entire roster of Marvel heroes. And the locations you go in this game, the enemies you fight, you know, going up against Doctor Doom, going up against Galactus, going to, where does Thor live? Asgard. All of the locations, it's a great kind of romp across the entire Marvel universe with popular Marvel characters as well as deeper cuts. I love that Blade is in here.
Yes.
That is awesome. And I love the system that they have. Like I said, you can pick four different heroes to be your squad. But because the Marvel Universe is full of teams, you could have, like, the Fantastic Four.
And the game recognizes as you do it.
And it recognizes it. And it, you can have, like, the Dark Avengers or whatever, you know.
Insert
rosters.
Your favorite team here.
Insert your favorite team here that I'm completely blanking on. But I loved that addition. And again, it made me interested in these characters that I didn't know much about. And when you would kind of stumble across a pairing and it would recognize it and say, this is the name of this team, I would, as a kid, I'd be like, ooh, like, there's history here that I didn't even know about, and I'm kind of like making that happen within these squads. So great, such a great roster. Probably the best roster in any Marvel Ultimate Alliance game,
yes.
I think. The best selection of levels. It's awesome. Don't buy it for £50, which
well,
is
they
what
removed
Activision,
those ones now, right?
I'm not sure, did they?
I think the whole thing, that's the whole thing with Ultimate Alliance 1 and 2 is that they were never readily available, and then I forget who the publisher is on that. But again, it's Raven on the developer, the forever overlooked Raven. But that that those games got published, and then they brought them back as a remaster. They drastically overcharged for them, especially because they were still buggy or whatever. Then they delisted it. Oh, we'll do better by these releases, and just never did. So it's not that easy to play Ultimate Alliance 1 or 2 anymore.
Sucks, man.
Which sucks because I had Ultimate Alliance 1 at my number 3.
Ooh.
Because I think it's everything that you just said. It's the team side of it. It's the sort of like the group chemistry. It's realizing that you can play as the likes of Blaze, and that everyone has a team up move, which I thought was really cool. And it's so much better than Ultimate Alliance 2. Like, I do like in 2 that you have to pick a side in the Civil War. You can side with Iron Man or Cap. But I just, Ultimate Alliance 1, every character had an individual grapple. Like, the challenge rooms were more fun. And like you said, like, the actual, like, levels you were going to were more fun. It just played better. I also think that if we're doing cherries on top of things that made me go, I love this, it was having the quiz in Ultimate Alliance 1. When you could just go to, I think the first conduit, it's either inside the X-Mansion or whatever you call the X-Men mansion, or it's inside the Sanctum Sanctorum, but you can interact with something, and the game just asks you like pop trivia Marvel questions, which as a tiny little nerd like me at like 14 years old was like, this is brilliant, this game sees me, and I'm here to be seen.
No joke, I reckon part of the reason I got this job at whatculture.com was by knowledge gained through that trivia quiz, because I had no idea about the wider Marvel universe, and then suddenly I have this trivia quiz that's like filling me in on all these characters and who they are and stuff, and that has just seen me through life.
Mm-hmm. It was a beautiful thing. So that was my, that's my number 3. That was your number 6.
Yeah.
So my number 5 is The Punisher, which was a game that I looked forward to so much when I was younger. I used to adore, I've got a Punisher. I was going to get a Punisher tattoo at one point, but I used to love the character of The Punisher so much, mainly because of Garth Ennis's run, not really that much else. I didn't even like the Netflix show that much. But Garth Ennis's initial run on the Punisher Max arc, there's like 10 volumes to that thing. You should just love that stuff. It's proper like grim dark. I'm going to kill everybody and I've got to do all this stuff. Yeah. Like talking like Vince McMahon. And I used to love all that old stuff. Whereas like now, I think if you go back to it, it is very grimdark. It is very like, you know, like badass 101. But that game, it's just a third-person shooter, but they had all the interrogation mechanics, lots of really over-the-top Mortal Kombat-style gore. You can dunk a dude's face in a piranha tank and watch all the piranhas hang off his face as you bring him back up again. And I just love that game. I've been through that game endless times. I could play it in my mind right now if I needed to. But that was one of the games that I looked forward to the most when I was younger. And for me, it nailed the execution as well.
I think this happens and is contractually obligated to happen every time we do one of these rankings, because my number 5 was also The Punisher.
Was it?
How does that work? I don't know. But yeah, I'd echo everything you just said. You know, playing that as a kid, especially, just the gnarly level of violence within that thing was just like crazy for the time. I actually kind of compare it in my head to Max Payne.
It plays just like Max Payne.
Yeah. It's almost got a similar aesthetic, and you put in dudes' heads in vices and all of that stuff. It's crazy.
Another thing is, sorry, just to throw in here, is that Max Payne, not that many games do really good NPC dialogue or really good situations where you're coming upon an event happening between NPCs or like whatever, like good banter between enemies and stuff. Punisher nailed that stuff, like especially in the Central Zoo level or in the opening Crackhouse level. Like there's so much going on in those levels that it feels like even if you weren't there, it would be ticking over anyway. And then you get to be the chaos element that kicks the door in and like shoots dudes or grabs them or like interrogates them for information or whatever. That's that extra Max Payne wrinkle that I feel like hardly any third-person shooters do anymore.
Yeah.
Where it feels like a living world that you're walking through. So that's my number 5. Oh, they're both of our number 5s.
Certainly are.
So we can quickly move on to number 4, which is Batman Arkham Asylum.
Who is it now?
I'm going to guess that your Arkham Asylum is higher. It just, for me, like I said before, my number 3 was Ultimate Alliance. My number 2 was X-Men Origins Wolverine, and we'll get to my number 1 in a bit. But for number 4, Arkham Asylum, having gone back through the Arkham trilogy, I dropped off about halfway through Arkham City, mainly because I was replaying that trilogy because of the Batman Unburied audiobook series, and that thing falls the F apart at the end, where I just can't stick the landing whatsoever, and it just made me go, oh, well, screw it then, I don't care about Batman anymore.
The Game of Thrones effect,
which just makes you, well, whatever then. But there's obviously, I've obviously been through the Arkham series before, back when they first initially came out, and Arkham Asylum was always one of the best ones, and when I replayed that earlier this year, it's still immaculate. I have a lot more love for Arkham Origins now than I ever did before. I always really liked that game, but I think if you go through it now, divorced from the hype at the time or the fact that it was just one more Arkham game, but it's not Rocksteady. Origins has a lot to offer, and I love, I was saying to you before recording, I love early going Batman when he's finding the line, how much do I have to push criminals, how much do I have to break their bones, how do I like make them not be criminals under the way that I think I'm supposed to be doing this. Him trying to find that line is some of the most engaging Batman fiction to me, so I love what Origins brings to the table, but if I'm picking one, it's got to be Arkham Asylum.
Interesting. And I can't fault it, you know, people, it's interesting to me, more so than what you said about Asylum, which was very interesting and very eloquent, but the fact that you were choosing between Origins and Asylum, like over City, because I mean they're all great
I
games.
I never rated City or
Night. That, I mean, well, I get to that in my thing later on, but yeah, Asylum is just, it holds up so well, like you said. And for me, Asylum sometimes gets the edge over City because of its aesthetic. You know, for me, it's way more gothic. It's way more kind of less tech heavy, if that makes sense. You know, it's kind of weirder. It's got this weirder color palette. And I really rate that. I think it's cool. In a neat idea to have Batman just kind of trapped on this island for like in the madhouse for 24 hours with all of these enemies. And again, like if we're talking about games that make you feel like characters, like the free flow combat is still, you know, chef's kiss to this day.
The best bit in that whole Arkham everything is the bit where he reveals there's a Batcave underneath Arkham Asylum, and you as the player don't know, and the Oracle doesn't know who's talking to you, and he gets to be Batman in his own Batman game where you think you're controlling Batman and he Batmans you one more, and I was like, that's exquisitely done, where like everyone is just going, sorry, what you built? And he's like, well, it's better to be prepared. And it's just like, that's just so cool. And it's like when you go in and it scans you, it's like a full tech thing, and I was this is, dude,
you know how like the very best video games kind of like leave a Sonic imprint on yourself? Not Sonic the blue guy, Sonic is in terms of audio.
Yes,
like
Sonic imprint, also a good podcast fan name. Yeah, go on.
Very good. I like think of Arkham Asylum and I can hear the tannoy before Joker will kind of like come in and talk to you and stuff like that. Exactly. I can hear like the chattering of the teeth on the floor. It left such an impression from an audiovisual standpoint that only the top tier of any game in any genre manages to achieve.
Yeah, extremely well put. I think the Arkham Asylum, it was a full package. Like that's, I mean, I'm not going to go on about why I rate it higher than City and Knight. I just think there's a certain focus to Asylum that just accentuates everything that is within. What is your number four?
Well, my number four was something we've already talked about. It was the Batman Telltale Season
1. Oh, yeah, you said, cool.
So if I'm, should we jump onto your
also in that
three?
Case, my number three would be Ultimate Alliance 1. We covered it. What is your number three?
My number three also has Ultimate in the title, but it's Ultimate Spider-Man,
which
I will never stop talking about. This is one of
someone
the best
should keep talking about it.
Spider-Man games. It, for me, it's leagues above Spider-Man 2, although I still love that game. If we're talking about full packages, my friend, Ultimate Spider-Man is the one for me. The cel-shaded look of it still holds up to this day. If you get this game on PlayStation 2, you will still be blown away, I think. I have a soft spot, like I mentioned previously, for the Ultimate Spider-Man universe. Like I said, that was the comic that I was into. So seeing those versions of heroes and villains in video game form to me was a real treat. The swinging is cool because you get these added elements where you can like climb up your web mid-swing and whatnot, which I really enjoy. And you get to play as Venom as well in certain levels and later on in the open world.
In children, Venom, I believe.
Oh my God, Venom in this game plays, he's like he's a literal creature. He's a monster who leaps from building to building and leaves kind of, you know, craters when he lands on the floor. You are eating children to regenerate your health, and you are chasing down people with balloons to just like massacre. And it's so dark, it's so cool, and the story as well is really fun. A lot of memorable boss fights in there. Essentially took what worked gameplay-wise, in my opinion, from Spider-Man 2 and refined it and got rid of the fat, got rid of everything that was kind of annoying in that game.
Did much better voice acting.
Missions. Yeah, much, much, much better voice acting. Tobey Maguire was nowhere to be seen, thank God. And I just think, you know, it's practically flawless in a way.
I would give you that. A massive shout out to the game's cutscene direction as well. I love the fact that it like looks like the panels come to life. I've not played Ultimate since when it first came out. Again, I rented that. And I remember being on what I think is the last boss. There's like a downed helicopter, a flaming wreckage fight of some sort, pulling a memory from 2004. And I remember being on that fight, and my mum was like, we've got to go, we've got to give the game back. And I was like, I'm coming, mum, as I'm like holding the controller, walking towards the door, still trying to play the game. Never finished that game, but I think that is the final fight. I got very, very close. But yeah, Ultimate Spidey, like you said, it has such an imprint, whether it's like, whether it's just this visual punch or just overall, it has such an identity to it. It was the first thing I downloaded on the Steam Deck.
Nice.
When I got that. And I'd like to go through that properly. So that was your number three.
Yep.
And then back to my number two would be X-Men Origins Wolverine, but we've covered it, which leaves your number two as something else.
Arkham City, this one.
Okay.
Which is
okay.
What made me kind of speak up when you were talking about choosing between Asylum and Origins, because for me, it is Arkham City, I think. I used to go backwards and forwards on whether I preferred Asylum, and while I do prefer the aesthetic of Asylum as a game, man, for me, it's City all the way. Like, the building out the open world to be a proper open world, for me, was a winning move, because the way that this game puts side missions into its environment and kind of like just has them be things that you stumble upon. And I'm talking about like the main side missions in this regard, I think is just so immersive. I love the kind of abilities that it adds to the traversal, where you're kind of like going up on the zip line and then you're kind of diving with the cape and flying around. All of that's cool. I like playing as Catwoman as well. The story's really interesting. And for me, it's just like Arkham Asylum, but better.
I always didn't like the fact that if Arkham Asylum was a pristine dinner place, then City was a shattered version of that.
Ooh.
Like not in necessarily a bad way, just in terms of what you were there, what you could see before was now going A to B to C. And I didn't like the open world stuff that much in City. So that's what always knocked it off for me. But I do agree with you that like stumbling upon those missions, if you find them, is great. Like something like the payphone going off, like Zaz or whatever being on the other end of the phone, that happens regardless. But other stuff like Hush, you just have to find him. And so I remember younger me was just like, well, that's BS because I want to do the Hush stuff. And then in Night, they were like, okay, let's make sure we serve this up to you. But then it was like too much. And so when I went back to City, I did enjoy my time with it, but I just, for overall, for me, Asylum pips it at the post. But it's like, I do see why people love City. Like, you are either a little bit too confined in Asylum, and there was something about being Batman in a city. The art direction as well for City is gorgeous. Like, the giant moon in the background, all the neon signs and everything. And all the neon light, rather, and everything's so smoggy and dank, and it's what a Batman city should be.
Definitely.
Like a Gotham City should be.
I think it's great that, you know, we've got this gaming franchise with four games in it now, and each one, even Night to an extent, has a different claim to being the best one, all for different reasons. Like, it's not a game series where the sequels kind of make the other titles redundant. Like, they're each kind of obviously building on a theme, building on a set of mechanics, but they're all doing it in a mostly unique way, with their unique kind of like artistic priorities, their unique aesthetic choices. And I love that differentiates them to like speak about as a whole, because everyone else has a different like favorite, and the reasons why their favorites is always interesting to pick apart.
But I always love the fact that, because like I said, I played like a little chunk of Night, and I went back and did all of Asylum, did all of Origins, and then about half of City. And I do love that the core stuff is the same the whole way through, in terms of you can get that combat system down and then they build on it in different ways. And I love all the different like accentuations you can do to your, that you can give your combat more flair in Arkham Knight, like you can kick off the wall and come back on a guy or something like that. But like you said, there's like a through line playability to it, where you can just get through that whole franchise or series of games with whatever reasons you prefer for each specific game along the way.
Totally, man. I love in City that you can just, I got untold hours out of not doing any missions, not doing any side missions, just kind of flying above the city and then dropping down at a group of random thugs and just kind of like pretending I was Batman, walking up to them slowly, you know, barely throwing a punch, just countering all the time, essentially doing what Robert Pattinson did in The Batman earlier this year, but living that out in video game form like 10 years ago.
I did that so much in Asylum, because it's always like you'll come out of a cutscene, you're Batman surrounded by a bunch of dudes, and you just kind of wait there. Like the cape is just down and spread out, and you're just waiting for someone to hit you. That stuff is so cool. So that would be your number two. My number one is Spider-Man on the PlayStation 1, which
no way,
which I didn't even you know when something is so obvious that you don't think about it for a while.
Yeah.
Putting this initial thing together, like I said, my initial number one was Spider-Man Miles Morales. That's what my brain said.
Right.
And then it was like through initial conversations, like we were potentially putting this together before recording, and you mentioned Spidey 1, and there was just something inside me went off that went, nah, it's that. It was always that. It was always Spider-Man on PS1. It's the opening of Stan Lee's narration. It's the fact that every single character who even cameos in that game is a perfect version of themselves. There's that great exchange between Daredevil and Spidey. I love how jokey and the Punisher stuff is. Venom is hilarious in that game.
So funny.
Like, I don't know what you call the dude who's playing him in that game, but it's the perfect, walks such a perfect line of being like big, dumb, heavy Venom with like a side of like kind of menacing and kind of like visually quite scary, especially if you're younger when you played it. But yeah, Spider-Man on PlayStation 1 for me is why I love Spider-Man as a character and the escapism side of it and everything else. So yeah, I just, Spidey on PS1 would be my ultimate comic book superhero game.
Hey, it's awesome, and it's topped off by the symbiote Doc Ock.
I thought you were going to say Spider-Man 2 Enter Electro, because that's usually your go-to thing.
I was getting to that. Spider-Man 2 Enter Electro may be a superior game for two reasons. One, Spider-Man has the web armpits, which are objectively the best thing in the world.
I don't like them at all.
And that's just classic.
Despite my homecoming, I'm like, what are you doing?
Classic.
I don't like them.
And it can also allows you to fight on the ground, which Spider-Man 1 doesn't allow you to do.
That's true. I remember being gutted by that when I was younger, but I just loved, because that was the thing, you talk about the first time that you took a character out into a city setting or did something that character does that you love. The first time I took Spider-Man to swing around a city was that first level of Spidey on the PS1. And it's not a massive level, but I mean, they gave that out as a demo back in the day as well. And I just spent forever in that area with Spidey saying, I've got to follow my Spidey compass. And I'm like, no, you don't, Spidey. I'm going to take you around these buildings for as long as possible.
Same, man. And I think the additions to the alternate costumes were also great, because each alternate costume came with their own unique powers. Mm. So obviously I was the black suit at Spider-Man because you got unlimited webbing, which allowed you to do exactly what you mentioned there. Just go from building to building, just search these essentially cardboard boxes in some fog, which rarely had any secrets to them, but occasionally would. And it was like, yeah, it was
there's something about amazing. That whole game's production that is put together with so much love. It has so much charm. I mean, I know it's Neversoft. They did just come off Tony Hawk's, and they went in to do Spidey after that. But it, like I said, it starts with Stan Lee's narration. He comes back in at the end. That game, even the version of Captain America, Mysterio, everyone that you find in that game, I just think they excel in the little tiny bits that they're given. And also Monster Rock at the end, like you mentioned, one of the most harrowing boss fights of all time. Even if you watch footage of it now, the sound effects that thing makes when it chases after you are like horrible.
Horrific.
So yeah, that's my number one, Spidey on PS1. Your number one?
My number one has to be Marvel Spider-Man on the PlayStation 4. And I must admit, I'm kind of cheating right now. I didn't acknowledge Miles Morales earlier.
Right.
Because in my head, I'd actually...
Like it's one big release.
I rolled it into Spider-Man because if you get, you know, Miles Morales on PS5 or even PS4, you can get access to the remastered version of Marvel's Spider-Man regularly. So they're kind of bundled in that way. That's my cheat that I'm going to use.
That works.
Taken together or even separately, admittedly, and if we're just focusing on the 2018 game, I do think it's the best superhero title ever made, because it's, like you said, you know, it's a love letter to Spider-Man, but also it's its own thing. Mm. I love what Insomniac did to kind of put their own spin on this character, not just in terms of the new costume, but in terms of their characterization of Peter, Mary Jane, etc., etc. Like, when you are playing through that game, you kind of don't know what you're going to get, because this is an older version of the character.
Yeah.
He's already fought a lot of these villains before, and it's kind of like a familiar but new world. And that's risky. Like, if you had told me before launch, which I guess they kind of did, that this was going to be, you know, an entirely unique take on this character, I would be worried, man. I'd be thinking, please get this right. You're not going to get it right. How are you going to beat what's already established in the comics? And in a way, they kind of managed to do that. And I just love the ballsiness of that.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, as much as like a lot of superhero games, recent ones have kind of done that almost bland color palette, bland art direction. Like the Guardians game looks very bland. Like, it plays very well. It plays solidly enough. The best thing about that game is the script, but the actual art direction isn't really anything to write home about. The Avengers game, very bland looking character models, very bland looking art direction overall. Spidey, for as much as like, I think it has more art direction, especially in terms of like, you know, the way that like the sun will just catch you in between a couple of buildings or something. It does have more signature elements, but even so, they make that style really work, where like you can just look at the sales figures for how much it's blown up. But it feels like a nicely matured version of what something like the PS1 game started.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, here's a great introduction to this mythos. Like, you know, bits and pieces like Doc Ock and Spidey and whatever, but it's just every bit of that thing just flies. I wanted them to have a bit more to the combat. I initially had Web of Shadows way higher on my list.
Right.
Because I like the web sling or whatever it's called, the web zip, I think it was called, where you can stay in the air forever, just like knocking off different dudes, fighting in the air, fighting on walls.
Yeah.
Where like only his feet are on the wall, but you're fighting like normally as if it was the ground. Stuff like that. I kind of wish the new Spidey games had more differentiable elements so they weren't as Arkham-y, but the amount of acrobatics you can do and just how much you can ping around the level or whatever, I do think like differentiated like that anyway.
Totally. I think that's kind of what not saved it for me, but I worried that the combat was going to be forgettable or just kind of like an Arkham clone, like a lot of the older Spider-Man games were, the amazing Spider-Man games especially.
Yeah, yeah.
But the introduction of the gadgets, which again Arkham kind of had, but I felt like I always was I thought they were way more pleasurable in Spider-Man than they ever were in the Arkham games, and just kind of like the flow that you get into, like you said, this acrobatic flow where you're sliding under the legs of one dude, you're bouncing off this guy, you're doing a web swing into a web kick to, you know, boot a guy off a skyscraper. It all had that flow that kind of elevated it for me and gave it way more of a dynamic spectrum to your options. That's
both
kind
of those
sense.
Games. No, it makes sense. Yeah. Both those games are the only ones. Some of the, like, I've only got like 6 platinum trophies, but in Miles and in the regular Spidey, I have that 100 combo thing. Because I was just like, let's just find an area where a bunch of dudes are going to spawn and try and take them all out without being hit. Spider-Man is a worthy number one.
I'll tell you what as well. What cements it for me as like the best superhero game is just kind of like the emotionality to the story as well. Like I won't spoil it now, but there is a real big emotional beat at the end.
Yeah.
But it's not just that. Like the rest of the game has like these really interesting relationships that you want to see explored. Like I would have loved this game if it was only the scene with Peter and MJ kind of talking and having relationship drama. You know, he's making food, then he's going to run out with Spider-Man. They nail that so well.
Him texting while he's Spidey and stuff.
Exactly, yeah. Man. And if you didn't have that foundation, the game wouldn't be as good, but they have that foundation. I just can't wait to see how they build on it with Spider-Man 2 and like they built on it with Miles Morales.
Yes. So either way, whether it's me or you, Spidey is at number one, but we'll see what happens with the future of superhero games and the Arkham series getting very close.
Very close.
X-Men Origins Wolverine getting very close. But yes, come find us on social media. Come let us know what you think the best superhero game of all time is. And for now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you. And we'll catch you next week.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
I'll go let James Dowse out.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.